You're listening to an Around Comics special, Grant Morrison talking with gods.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, and this is a special episode of Around Comics. We are talking about the Grant Morrison documentary, Talking with Gods. Hey there, folks. I'm Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mr. Brian Salazar. How are you doing, sir?
Good.
And we are also joined by the producer and cinematographer of Grant Morrison, Talking with Gods, Mr. Jordan Renner. Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
It's great to have you here. We just watched the screening of the documentary. We are at Challengers Comics and Conversation. By the way, our fine friends that are hosting us for this great Challengers Rogues Gallery event. First of all, congratulations on the documentary and getting out and about in the country for screenings like this.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Yes. Thank you all for coming out and sitting and enjoying the film. I hope you did. We had an awesome time making it. Patrick and I have discussed recently that, you know, it really wasn't all that difficult of a film to make. It was just a labor of love the whole time, and not too many awful, like, there weren't really many problems along the way, and I think the labor of love comes out in the finished product, definitely. So, sure. Hope you guys all enjoyed it.
Yes, we are. I forgot to mention at the top, this is a question and answer session. We actually have a live audience here.
They have chairs and everything.
Say hello, everyone. Hello. All
right. Well, that's right off the top. How did this film come together? Where, you know, what was the starting process for you guys? Are you a Grant Morrison fan? Is that how it started? Where did it all come from?
I personally am definitely a Grant Morrison fan. I'm not the world's biggest comic book person, but I've always been a huge fan of Grant Morrison stuff because Patrick, the film's director, who's been my best friend since high school, or actually since kindergarten rather, he kind of just turned me on to comics. And the first thing that he turned me on to was after Preacher, I went straight to The Invisibles, and I just totally became obsessed with that series for a while. And the way that the movie came about was Patrick, who is also a writer besides being a director of films such as this one, he was so obsessed with The Invisibles and just loved it so much in it that he wrote a blog for a while, kind of chronicling and just kind of analyzing all the stories of that make up The Invisibles. And from that, this company based in Philadelphia called Sequart Research and Literary Organization.
Sure.
Kind of reached out to him and said, hey, we see that you have all these blogs about The Invisibles. Why not compile it into a book? And there was, most of the legwork had already been done. Patrick had already done all the blogs covering The Invisibles. So, the next process was just to put it into a book, which is the book that is available here. And at most comic stores, it's called Our Sentence is Up. And from that book, part of the deal, Sequart had been in contact with Grant Morrison for some other project. I'm not exactly sure what it was. But part of the deal, yes, there's the book in the back. It is available.
Patrick Brower, retailer extraordinaire.
Product placement.
So Patrick wrote this blog all about Grant Morrison's series called The Invisibles, and it's just his analysis on, digging deeper into it. And part of the deal in making that book was they had asked Grant if we could do an audio interview with him so that we could put this interview asking questions about The Invisibles into the back of this book. And Patrick and I, we have our own video production company. That's what we do professionally. It's called Respect Films. We're based in New York City. We have all the equipment. So, and he kind of came up with the idea of why not pitch them the idea while we're doing this audio interview to ask these questions, why don't we film it? And then he came up with the idea of, he was such a fan of Grant Morrison. Why not ask Grant, put it out there, see if he's around, maybe if he's available. Why not, instead of just filming this audio interview, why don't we tell your whole life story? So he kind of gave, in the email that was explaining, the preliminary email before he asked the questions for his book, he just kind of put it out there. And there's an email thread that now exists titled The Greatest Email of All Time, which is Grant's, or it came from Grant's wife, Kristen, saying that, yeah, you know what? If you guys want to make a documentary about Grant, sure, we're cool with that. So why don't we do that? So that's simple how enough. This film came about, really.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how you get all of the guests on the documentary, the interviews that you compile. You have the advantage in comics that, you know, once a year in San Diego, you can knock out just about everybody in the comic book industry. But there were obviously a lot of San Diego Comic-Con interviews there. What were some of the other locations that you guys were able to go to talk to different creators, different artists, and Grant himself?
Sure. So basically how this all came about was the film was in its idea phase when we first got that response back from Kristen, Grant's wife, saying, sure, we're cool with you guys doing the whole life story thing. And that was, I think, in about February of 2009. So we wanted to get the project moving right away. So a couple of emails later, we were heading out to LA to do the first round of interviews with Grant. As you can tell, most of the movie is interview based. So the first interview that we did was in LA. And that is, I can explain that by, that's the one where Grant's sitting at his couch and also at his desk in the white shirt. And also, when he's kind of, he's standing on that mountain, that's, I think it's called Laurel Canyon Park. It's somewhere near Mulholland Drive in LA. That's where that interview took place. So basically the process was we got about 3 days worth of filming with Grant. Each interview day was 3 to 4 hours worth. And then we had the initial meet to kind of figure out what the story was going to be. So that was in, that was April 2009, we had the base of our documentary. And then next was, we knew San Diego Comic-Con was coming up, but we also filmed at some other comic conventions on the East Coast. I think it was Philadelphia Comic-Con is where we interviewed Phil Jimenez. But like you were saying, some of the more interesting locations and spots were probably after we realized we really had something here, after this, all this voices we got from San Diego 2009, we decided to go over to Scotland and the United Kingdom to film a bunch of collaborators over there, such as, you know, Warren Ellis you saw. Dez Skin was mentioned a whole bunch as far as how Grant got his first start. So we headed down to Dez Skin, who lives in Brighton in London. So that was a really cool spot.
It's a nice excuse to take a little European vacation.
That's exactly what it was. All of our destinations were based around Grant Morrison's life. So nice. Thanks, but, Grant, you know, for having such an interesting life.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Warren Ellis was a really cool one. Or some of the other good spots. Really, the best spots were definitely Grant's house in Scotland, which is just really beautiful place. And just there was an aura there, as kind of chronicled.
Did he let you stay there?
No. Well, we never asked, actually. They were really gracious hosts. There was never a moment where, like, we're 3 hours away. Maybe we could just crash here.
But you open up your Scottish castle for us.
They did offer us biscuits at one point. That was a highlight for all of us. They were just cookies to people like you and I here in America, but there they were called biscuits, and we were pretty obsessed with that.
But they had psychotropic mushrooms in them.
I wish. Maybe if we were filming this in his 30s, that might have been the case.
Yeah, you know, that was...
He was a more sedate Grant Morrison these days.
And well, talking about the documentary, you do chronicle his life, and it does talk about his drug and alcohol kind of decade that he had, but it goes from his early childhood and beginnings as a musician and writer and exploring kind of walking the earth. He kind of got Cain like there, didn't he? As walking the earth.
He had some adventures. It seems like Grant really likes to write from what he knows. So he wanted to know some trippy stuff. Obviously, you were familiar with his work. You were a fan of The Invisibles, and going in being the cinematographer of the film and shooting it. Was there ever a moment or a time where you started to think or had to fight the urge of wanting to make it visually strange or trippy or weird because it's Grant Morrison and you thought maybe that people would expect that, or because I personally enjoy that it was for the most part a straight documentary, and you did some nice editing work and that kind of thing in there, but for the most part it's pretty straightforward in the camera shots and that kind of thing, and you didn't go over the top with any of the any kind of weird thing, and I would think that would be maybe an urge you had to kind of fight a little bit, or at least a thought.
Well, yeah, Patrick and I would kind of discuss what we thought the aesthetic of the project should be, and that was kind of to kind of convey. You can see there's like a certain level of shakiness to the camera, and the shots are, they're normal shots, but it's kind of like a little dirtier. We always try to keep like some degree of movement for as many shots as possible, because I don't know. I thought it kind of matched up with sort of like, you know, his, he was saying his roots were like kind of very punk rock and DIY. And this guy was, you know, he just started drawing himself when he was a young kid. So that was, we're trying to get him, get that energy. That was kind of like the thought process behind how we were shooting it.
Did you ever consider subtitles?
Subtitles. Subtitles are available on this
they are.
DVD.
We've talked about this before. Sal has trouble with British accents, and as soon as it starts, like, he's not going to understand a fucking word.
We put out an initial, you know, trailer for the movie. I think, I don't know, right after we had first filmed with Grant, maybe it was April 2009 or May, and the YouTube comments are just like, give me subtitles, please. And just this debate occurred, like, deal with it. You can figure it out. And others were like, no, we need them. I think, for me personally, I've been around him too much that I think after about 20 minutes, it clicks. But I guess some people, yes.
Well, it was actually interesting watching the film by the end of it. I did seem to understand him better. Right? I was starting to get...
Great. Well, the thing is, he's throwing so much at you in this 80 minutes that... You there's no
you're not
way
gonna
you
get it all anyway
because actually after even seeing the movie five or six no more than that 10 times probably when I sat down to actually subtitle the thing, there were moments where I was like, oh, that's what he was saying, where I had to literally fight with what is being said here. And then when I finally wrote it out, it didn't really click to me until I literally transcribed it, and it got even deeper.
That's
funny.
That's like one of the jobs you never think of, like an independent film producer.
Somebody's
got to do the subtitles.
Yes, I respect films.
You didn't have a staff to do that for you? No?
We kept it local.
What's the runtime on the movie?
The runtime is either 79 or 80 excellent minutes, is what I like to say. I think it's 80 excellent minutes, yeah.
Well, you were familiar with Grant's work, obviously. You're a fan of his work. And going into it, I assume you had knowledge about him, you know, from an outsider's perspective. What surprised you about him the most? I mean, what were the things that you were not prepared for? You know, were the things that just completely threw you off from what you were expecting?
I think just making the movie and being around Grant, and, you know, he has such an aura. He's just realizing that he is a man who is spending... It was just mind-blowing to hear that he's spending his 16 to 17 hours a day just typing, just writing. Kind of locks himself away in that room, and he's just going at it the whole time. I mean, that's where the awesomeness comes from. The fact that this guy is just giving 100% to writing and creating stories. That was just, you know, just seeing that, I think, was one of the big kind of awe-inspiring moments. You know, just a man who's found his mastercraft and putting 1,000% into it.
Did he convince you that magic is real?
I always kind of believed it was real. kind of there. I mean, one interesting story is Patrick and I were talking about in May, or what was it? I think it was like November of 2008, and just where our business was and kind of what we needed to do to kind of get things off the ground. For our own business was we needed a camera and all the lighting equipment to kind of do stuff like this and other projects, even unrelated to this project. And we both kind of mentioned a date, which was we need to have our HVX 200, which is the camera that we shot this on, by January of 2009. I'm sorry. Let's make this happen. So we both kind of thought of it and didn't, I will not explain whether a sigil was made or anything like that. But just for, we basically said, you know, like that's where we kind of want to be and discussed it. And in the next like 3 weeks, just this dream project appeared that kind of gave us the budget to buy our own camera, buy our own equipment, start our own company. And I feel like at least up to this point, one of the main reasons that this company was formed and why we were able to do this was to make this movie. You know, this movie, it's pretty cool. It gets to transcend just geography and people over in England and Australia are all, you know, want to see it.
Sure.
And it's like, you know, the movie had to be made. And I kind of feel like, to me, that was the initial magical experience of just where we even got our equipment, I feel like, is somewhat related to this project. So I was always kind of a believer. That's actually, I love Grant's comics, but I also I was obsessed with Pop Magic back in the day. You know, his guide to kind of, it's like Grant Morrison presents The Secret, basically. But
right.
I was kind of, I'm totally into that, just my own lifestyle and beliefs. Yeah. So I never needed to be.
And in the documentary, you learn how to make a sigil if you want, if you're interested in such things.
That's right.
He's free with that information.
Very free with the information. One of the things I'm always interested about in the filmmaking process, especially documentaries, is what gets left behind. Because there's so much footage that you guys have to shoot for this. There's so much stuff that you have to compile and edit down. What were some of the things that you had to leave out of the movie that you wish that you could have kept in?
That's a good question. Also, I think the end count is 48 people were interviewed for this thing. And there's a lot of voices you can see when you're watching it, but a lot of people got... Just in the end, it's not that they didn't. There was a lot of great moments that just kind of had to go away.
Everyone has an opinion on Grant Morrison, so everyone's going to have something to say, I'm sure.
One thing that I don't think we don't mind isn't being shown was somebody at like San Diego Comic-Con when we first started filming this. We just kind of put out an open invitation to anyone. If you have a Grant Morrison story, you know, maybe this will make the documentary. And somebody said they had the most amazing Grant Morrison story, and it ended up being like, he promised the best thing ever. And when the guy finally came, he was like, okay, you guys recording? Check this out. He was talking to me, and I couldn't understand what he was saying. It was crazy, or something like that. That was the meat of his story. We're like, okay. So we've seen a lot of awful things that obviously should be cut. But as far as what, I don't know. What did we kind of leave behind? At one point, I asked this wacky question to Frank Whiteley and Grant Morrison that was just, I don't even know where I was going at. I was just trying to explain. I saw that they were both, they had worked so closely together. They have this bond, obviously. We all see it on the pages that they're kind of like the super team. And I just asked like a question to him. If you guys were like a couple, who would be the guy and who would be the girl? And their response was, as it probably should be, was just like, the fuck are you talking about? So I think for me personally, that was a funny moment. I don't even know why I asked the question, but that didn't make it in there. And you see why, because it's irrelevant to the story.
Was there anyone you talked to that you ended up not being able to use, or was there anyone that you didn't get to talk to that you really wanted to?
Yeah, there was a lot of... We almost sat down with Grant Morrison's mom, which Gordy Gowdy, who, he's the childhood friend, the guy whose guitar is found. He had given us the contact information for that, but it just kind of logistically didn't match up. And in the way, I kind of think that it may have worked out better that way, because this way it gets to be more Grant's, Grant's kind of take on himself, which I think is how we want to kind of present it. And maybe that would have been cool. It would have been cool to get a couple more baby pictures and stuff, but that one didn't work out. And who else? Oh, Gerard Way. We really wanted to interview because, obviously right now he's like at the top of the world with My Chemical Romance. And for those who don't know, Gerard Way is the lead singer of My Chemical Romance, the band that's quite popular right now.
This crowd is going to be much more familiar with the Umbrella Academy, I think.
or the writer of Umbrella Academy, and he's just a really good friend of Grant Morrison. And just timing-wise, we literally had him in San Diego. He was like, yes, tomorrow we'll do it. Just get in touch with my dude, but he got too busy, and it just didn't happen. And right now, it totally hurts that there's...
Did you ever run across anybody? I mean, obviously in the film, it's, a lot of his friends and childhood friends and people he's worked with, that kind of thing. But did you run across anyone that was just like, fuck Grant Morrison, or just really negative?
We had reached out to some people that I think that we had gotten contacts through the through his band and people that knew him from the past. And somebody was saying that, they just had, we asked them if they were available for the interview, and they said, you know what, I'd rather just keep my mouth shut. And I don't have anything positive to say, which we really wanted to interview, but the guy kind of backed down.
Really?
So we were ready with the cameras firing. It's digital video. We can film whatever, It's not going to cost us anything.
Yeah. No, use them film.
Well, you want to open it up to the audience here?
Wendy, down.
I want to know, why wasn't his wife interviewed? Why didn't he interview Kristen?
Oh, I should have probably included that in the last response, which was, we would love to have interviewed Kristen. However... We did not, because she desired to remain mysterious. Those are her words. So the mystery continues. She just didn't want to interview. She wanted to remain mysterious.
Right, next.
Can you blame her? Now the mystery lives on.
Mr. Suntress?
A familiar voice from the back of the room.
Well, building on the idea, too, that there would be people that didn't have a favorable impression of Grant, I can think of a couple of comic professionals that were probably there at San Diego. People like, and he even makes an allusion to it, I think, when he says one of his best friends was very public in saying some things about him. I'm assuming that was Mark Miller. I don't know if you guys attempted to try to speak to Mark Miller.
We did, and logistically, that one didn't work out. So
okay. And also, what about, because he had a bad breakup with Marvel as well. And I know you guys kind of talk about, you know, new X-Men and stuff, but Quesada was Quesada ever approached?
That I'm not sure. Because Patrick and Amber are mainly in charge of reaching out to some of that stuff. I don't think, I'm not 100% sure. I don't think there wasn't any bad blood or anything. That one just didn't work out.
And were there any areas where, like Grant and Kristen said, you can't, you know, we'd rather you not cover X or Y or anything like that?
Basically, that's what was, I think, is why the movie is so, I'm a fan of it, why it works so well is because Grant really kind of was very genuine and kind of said that I don't really have anything to hide. He wanted to share his story, as he says in that last comment. There was no people like, you were not interviewing this person or this or that. No. It was all out there, but we missed Gerard Way. We missed some people. What are you going to do?
Anyone else?
Questions? Come on, don't be shy.
Oh, it's Grant Morrison.
You guys,
somebody's got to have a question.
Nothing?
Oh. There we go.
You interviewed the Senatoro director a lot. Do you know anything about that project? Or it's an independent film.
I only know that it seems to be the most awesome thing ever. And yeah. I want to be involved in it somehow. That's all I can say. I don't, honestly, with these interviews that keep coming out, I'm learning more and more information from it. But what insights do we know from that? I don't know. I'm just looking forward to that thing 10,000%. And I don't have any really new insight on that.
I'm not familiar with that project. What is? Do you know anything about
that? That is, Grant has written a script that it's hard to even explain. It's kind of like his take on the American myth and kind of like the road movie. But it seems like if David Lynch were doing like Route 66 mixed with all kinds of wackiness, him and you could see in the movie,
so it's
the
director. It's an independent film.
It's an independent film that they're making with some studio in LA called Zidane. And I want to say, I think, no one quote me on this, but it's like a $5 or $6 million budget project. So it's still indie, but they're trying to do like really big things, and Grant's trying to attack cinema, you know, kind of with no rules. Mm-hmm. They kind of have complete 100% control for some indie movie that's going to come out in 2012, most likely.
Did Sequart? Did they have, after you had the film shot, did they have any hands-on approach to the film? Did they?
They sent us a lot of notes that we were free to either go with or not, but Sequart is two guys who really know their comics and they know their stuff, so we actually, I mean, we're friends with them as well. So, their notes were really extremely helpful.
Yeah, they're very in-depth.
And also, website of theirs. They're a huge part of the help was that they were able to connect us with all these people. Okay. So a lot of the people interviewed, we were using their contacts. And our next project, this Warren Ellis documentary, is largely because of Sequart's doing a whole push on Warren Ellis books, including an anthology on Planetary, Warren Ellis's career in general, a Transmetropolitan book, so they opened up that door.
Okay.
Kind of partnering together.
You're working on that now?
That's the next project. As you can see, we shot Warren Ellis in the world's darkest room. We try to create. We're going to, in 2000 and this year, upcoming is 2011. Hopefully by the end of 2011, we'll have a documentary about Warren Ellis. We'll definitely have it. The question is, will it be 2011 or early 2012? And that one's exciting because right now we're in the ideas phase for, we've shot one really long interview with him, and there are a lot of zingers. That's a direct quote from the editing room. Me and Patrick were discussing what we have so far. And right now we're in the stage, you know, with documentary. It's all about trying to figure out what the story is. So we're piecing that together. I think it's going to be a very different movie than this, but it's going to be equally insane. Hopefully.
You guys are cornering the market on comic book creator documentaries, it sounds
like. If you wrote a comic book, we're going to knock on your door with our camera. So watch out.
Another question here?
Any word about the We 3 project? Like, is that still being made a new movie?
I think that's part of the reason that Grant is making Sinatoro. Is that how you pronounce it? I always forget. It's either Sinatoro or Sinatoro, because it is kind of based on Sinatra.
I thought it was like a Sinatra. I'm like, Grant Morrison's doing a Sinatra film?
It's a play on Frank Sinatra's name, because that has inspired some of the characters. Oh. So I forget how you pronounce it. But We 3, supposedly, according to some of our friends who are in like the LA script game, is supposedly one of the best unproduced scripts in Hollywood. I know at one point the director of Kung Fu Panda had signed on to be involved. But I think it's still trapped in development hell, I want to say, which is sad because that would be such an awesome movie.
Yeah, familiar story. You know, on a personal note, you talked about doing a Warren Ellis documentary and whatever else you guys are going to be doing after that. You know, we talked at the beginning, you know, are you a comic book fan? Do you find yourself like now that you have to, you know, digest, you know, a metric ton of Warren Ellis comics? Do you kind of approach that? It's like, you know, focus on a creator and just kind of ingest those comics now?
Yeah, that's how I'm doing it.
Yeah,
I just bought Warren Ellis' book today to do just that. But yeah, I mean, why not, right? And it's kind of like, this is like, kind of like a dream project anyways, to get to document these people who are so interesting. So that is kind of, that's been my workflow, is, you know, start reading up on all the things there, because you don't know where the idea is going to come from for how to attack it. Especially with the Warren Ellis thing right now, because it's all about trying to find the approach and, you know, the treatment on how we're going to turn that into a story.
Sure. Now the documentary, as we, you know, probably wrap up here in the next few minutes, documentary is available for purchase for people out there. Where?
Right. If you go to our distributor, the lovely Halo 8, I think it's halo8.com, you can get linked to buying the movie directly from them. Halo 8. I forget. Is it halo8.tv? You guys know how to use the internet. It's www.halo8.tv. Nice. And you can buy this DVD directly from them, or you can even download the movie digital copy and you will have it instantly. Or you can buy this one last copy from me. I will autograph it.
Now, as people hit the convention circuit, firing up here in 2011, do you guys have any more plans to do screenings at you know, comic conventions around the country? Is that something that you guys have planned?
Right now, yeah, there's a bunch of dates. There's something in England that we're lining up. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to actually go there in person, but we're definitely sending the movie. But we're getting this is a really cool part, because now the movie's out there, and anybody, if you want to screen this, just send us an email and we will get back to you definitely on how to make it happen, because we just want this movie to be seen by as many people as possible and people to enjoy it.
The film itself has a website. It's I believe it's Grant Morrison.
Yep, movie? GrantMorrisonMovie.com.
Right.
And the production company that created this has a website, respectfilms.com. So we are available to do any project that you can dream up as well.
I might have an idea for you.
I like it.
All right. Any more questions, Sal?
I think that's it.
Anyone else from the audience? All right. I want to thank everyone on behalf of Dal and Patrick here at Challengers Comics and Conversation for coming out to the Rogues Gallery screening of Grant Morrison Talking with Gods. I want to thank Mr. Jordan Rennert for coming all the way in from New York City to present this. So thank you very much, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you all, too.
That was the question and answer session.
Q&A, as it were.
Yes, the Q&A, which was very pleasant. Jordan, very
very likable young
very,
man.
Yeah, very nice, likable young man. So, yeah, definitely, folks, if you have the opportunity to see a screening of that in your area, I think you should take it in. And for uber Grant Morrison fans, I think it's good internet buy to pick that up. I enjoyed it.
I bought the film. Yeah. I thought it was – I did mm-hmm. like it. I'm not a – I mean, you know me. I'm not a huge Grant Morrison fan.
So, you run really hot and cold with
yeah.
him.
There's things of Grant Morrison's I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. All-Star Batman or All-Star Superman mm-hmm. and his X-Men run I really enjoyed. And Animal Man, Doom Patrol,
yeah.
We Three. Yeah. Sure. But then there's stuff of his that I think is absolute crap. And I, you know, I appreciate the people that say, well, I'd rather see a spectacular failure. Than
yeah,
a
there was, good, that's a good, you know, fraction. Out of the documentary.
I don't want to pay for it, you know, so.
Well, I mean, there is stuff. It's,
but
for me anyway, with comics is, you know, I enjoy to be challenged, but there are times when, you know, I don't want to be challenged so much. And
yeah, it's just, I mean, it's to me, I don't know. I don't have a problem with being challenged with a story and having to think about something. But I think when it gets in the way of the narrative, when it gets in the way of my actual enjoyment of a story, I mean, I, you know, if I want to think about things, I'm going to read other, you know,
other stuff.
I don't read comics to have to try and decipher the world. Or I shouldn't say that. I don't mind if a comic book enlightens me to something that I haven't thought of before. That's great. That's mm-hmm. fantastic. I don't want to have to decipher something to try and determine if there is anything there enlightening.
That's a great way to put it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Morrison certainly can be, you know, guilty of doing that. And, you know, kind of back to the documentary, I think that I think it does kind of enlighten us as to why.
Well, because I have for years these weird this question about, like, how is it possible that a writer like him, there's things I love and then there's things that I absolutely hate. How is that possible that the same guy is putting out the same stuff? And then, you know, after watching the film, the one thing that became very clear to me is that he's sort of, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but he's sort of like the ultimate narcissist as a writer. Mm-hmm. It seems that he cannot write anything that he doesn't experience, that he writes everything from his own personal experience. And so if that experience is not something I'm interested in, or that experience is something that is incomplete and is too difficult for him to try and convey to me, or that experience is just...
If that experience begins from a seed of being incomprehensible,
yeah,
then the end result is
going to be incomprehensible. Yeah. I mean, maybe it makes sense to him because he had the experience, but I in the translation, it's lost in the translation. I can't experience it as much as he tries to put that on paper, as much as the artist tries to, you know, convey that in the pictures. I'm never going to be able to experience that same thing he does. So sometimes I think it just doesn't work. And that really helped me understand him. And quite honestly, once I kind of got that, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I would go back and actually read some of his stuff that I haven't enjoyed and look at it from a different light.
Yeah, from that perspective.
From a different perspective. Because he's, you know, he really is just sort of, I think he's rather unique in that sense. I don't know that a lot of writers work from that sense of purely, you know, purely visceral from their own experience. I mean, obviously writers all write from their own experience, but I think most writers, fiction writers, are writing more empathetic. You know what I mean? It's like,
well,
you,
I mean, what we find out in the documentary is that he has a fairly sheltered childhood,
mm-hmm.
Ends up going to boarding school, becomes kind of an uber shut-in geek.
Writing comics and drawing comics. And
then he starts a band and is very passionate about that. That ends up not working. He throws himself into comics. And kind of becomes kind of a shut-in again as he wraps himself in this world of comics. And then he has a big hit with Arkham Asylum, and all of a sudden, kind of overnight, he's
rich and famous, and everybody loves him, and he goes
I'm going to go travel the world and experience all these things I've never been able to. And then
he freaks out. You know, he has, not a freak out, but you know what I mean? It's like all of a sudden, oh, he's doing drugs, and he's
getting abducted by aliens.
Yeah, and you see it in his work, and it's like, oh, well, that's sort of, I mean, that's sort of really interesting, and it is...
I mean, it's from old, a writer, from an old saying that you write what you know.
Yeah.
and now we see it's like, well, he was writing from experience of probably for the first time in his life, not just writing about things that he wanted to do. He was writing about weird shit that he was doing. He was talking about going to fetish clubs.
And I think, like I said, for me, it's a thing of like, oh, okay, well, on one hand, I appreciate that, but on the other hand, I don't know if I think that makes him a great writer because of that. I think that he, you know, has made some great stories, that he's experienced some interesting things, been able to translate that. But to me, a fiction writer, which is basically what he is, he's a fiction writer, doesn't necessarily have to experience everything to write about it. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, some do, I guess. You know, Hemingway, a lot of what he wrote about was what he experienced. But, you know, I think there are a lot of writers that not everyone is going to, if you're going to write about something, you don't have to go through that, you know, actual experience to write about it. You know, that's not necessary for everyone, I think. So in some ways, it's almost like he's sort of, as imaginative as he is, he's sort of stunted. You know what I mean?
In a weird way, you would never before watching this think that his imagination is you know, in a word, stunted. But I think he's constantly looking for stimulation for his imagination, and he draws on that from the outside world. Now he has this amazing, fairly unique filter in how to take that stimulation and then redirect it into his writing. But yeah, I think that's a very interesting way to kind of look at it.
And I thought, well, you know, for me personally, one of the things that they talked about in the film is like in the last few years, he's really backed away from that. And his writing has really come from purely his imagination. He locks himself in a room. He's not out looking for the outside stimuli. He's purely, you know, pulling this from his imagination. And for me,
yeah,
it shows.
Yeah, go back on the road.
No offense to Grant Morrison, he had
the 10 years of exploring, and now he's drawing from all of that experience. It's like this is the next chapter in his life.
I mean, to me, it was like now he's just sort of like he's not experiencing any outside stimuli. He's trying to do it in all a more conventional way of just like sitting there and imagining these stories, and you see Final Crisis, and you see...
Well, I like Final Crisis.
Well, you know, I don't think it's terrific storytelling. I don't think it's, you know, and his Batman stuff, I think, has been...
Batman is so...
I mean, this is just my personal
taste. I know, Batman, you put Batman in a vacuum, and I think it's a perfect example of Grant Morrison's work, because there are chapters of Batman that I think are just absolutely amazing, fantastic superhero storytelling. And then it goes wildly off the rails, and then it comes back. And that is that teeter-totter of, I love Grant Morrison, Grant Morrison's driving me fucking crazy.
Right, exactly.
That's been his Batman run. And,
you know, I will say, you know, it's like the guy does not... He does not take a conservative. He takes chances, and I'll give him all the credit in the world. He takes chances. And one other thing I thought, talking with Jordan about it afterwards, one of the things that I thought really came through in the film is that whether you think he's insane, whether you think he's a drug addict, whether you think, you know, the whole magic thing and the way he comes up with stories, whether you see his, you know, perspective and agree with it, or you completely think he's full of shit, the one thing that I think comes through is that he's a genuine guy.
He's like, consistent.
Yeah, he's, you know what, he's consistent. He's he's very genuine. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he believes what he says. He's not. You know, there's not a pretense to him really there in that film. You know, whether or not you agree with it, or whether or not you think he's crazy.
Yeah, or whether or not you like his work.
Yeah,
there are people like that love it and hate it. You know, we're looking at you know, he's been doing this for 20 years now.
No, sure.
You know,
Jesus, 30 years.
Almost. Is it almost 30 years?
1980.
Oh yeah. Back in the
70.
80s.
Well, back when he was doing UK stuff.
Oh sure,
in the 70s, right?
Yeah,
2008. Yeah.
I'm getting old. I'm losing decades.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah, about 30 years now. Years, so probably. Which is, you know, it's still, even for me, he feels like one of the new guys.
Really?
You know, in some ways, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, because, you know,
that's sort of interesting.
His you know, even whenever I go and read his Vertigo stuff, like Animal Man or Invisibles, right, that stuff, it still has a freshness to it because the idea is he's a very unique voice, whether you like it or not, and his ideas are, I mean, he's working in a playground that very few other, you know, writers are either able to or
willing to,
or willing to step willing into. And it still feels fresh. And I think that we have now a whole generation of writers that are coming up behind him that are trying to emulate that in some small way. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he still feels like a pretty fresh voice to me.
He's going to be 50, I think.
Wow.
He is 50, or he is 50, almost 50.
Still looks 50. Good.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. There is something about
bald is
like,
sexy, right?
Like the
right,
whole, so? Yeah, sure. if you're Scottish and, you know.
Ah, damn.
There is something about him that, like, it is interesting to see sort of like his persona. You know, there's a definite Grant Morrison persona, and it, I don't know yet. Like, even watching this film, mm-hmm. I mean, in the film, you don't see it that much, but there is still hints of it. Like, you know, the whole magic thing and the whole, you know, sort of rock star thing.
It's
like he may not sit there and and work hard at it, but he doesn't mind that that's out there either.
I call it bruised cockiness.
Bruce cockiness. That's probably a good example. Yeah,
you know, he was you know, a shut in geek that the guy, and he perpetuated the image. But in a lot of ways, he is comic books rock star.
Yeah, he certainly is. I mean, I don't, you know, whatever that means, tallest midget or shortest, tallest midget.
Yeah.
But he's an interesting guy. There's no question. Mm-hmm. And I would, you know, as much as he'll drive me absolutely, and you know me, you know, over the years, you've heard me bitch and complain about Grant Morrison and call him a hack and call him, you know, Alan
Moore. I'm not reading this shit.
Yeah, exactly. You've heard me talk about it.
But I've also heard you praise him more than most writers.
And he is a super interesting guy that I would love to have a conversation with someday. Sure. I'd love to talk to, just because he is kind of crazy and interesting and thinks outside of the box. So you got to give him, like I said, you got to give him credit for at least trying big things. There's, you know, and they don't always work, and sometimes they're spectacular failures.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm as ready as Matt Fraction to give him credit for a spectacular failure, but hey, at least he's swinging for the fences. You can't blame him for that. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
I was talking to the buddies on 11 o'clock, and really excited this past week to get the absolute all-star.
Now, see,
Superman.
If I was a if I was a smaller man, I would just sit there and talk bad about them like they talk about me and around comics every time it's mentioned on their show. How awfully they talk about me in that.
But you would never do that.
But I won't do that.
You're the bigger man.
I'm a bigger man.
You're the bigger man. All-Star Superman is probably my favorite comic of the last decade.
It's amazing.
That and New Frontier. I mean, it's those two pieces of work are, I think, the finest examples of superhero comics the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's All-Star Superman is. And that's the frustrating thing to me, because I sit there and read that and go, why can't you just make everything like that? Yeah. Why can't you just do that? Mm-hmm. You know, but then like I said, he'll do something, you know, like The Filth, or he'll do it for me like Final Crisis, which I just think is, to me, Final Crisis was a disaster. It was a disaster. And maybe I need to go back and read it again. I read it when it was coming out. I did not enjoy it. I thought it was a complete disaster of a work. But, you know, like I said, maybe I need to read it again or something. But it is just frustrating to just go, God, how is this the same guy? How is the same guy that, you know, that writes Animal Man and then, you know, The Filth?
Well, you know, I think, you know, in the documentary, we see a lot of this, that, you know, what is going on
in his life right then.
It really impacts. They talk about, you know,
the
Filth. He was going through a fucking dark time in his life.
It's like, it's a great strength to him, but I think it's also his biggest weakness as a writer. You know what I mean? It's a tremendous strength to him, because when it works, it's spectacular. But I think it's also a big weakness. I think that is really why he, to me, has so many ups and downs. He has such highs and such lows, and not a whole lot in between.
Because he connects his writing maybe to his personal experience.
And so when it works, it works great. But when it doesn't,
it's a rock star.
Well, he doesn't have any way to compensate. When it doesn't work, he doesn't have the ability.
He doesn't have a restrictor plate.
Well, it's not a restrictor. Yeah. It's like, okay, you know, a fiction writer sitting there and writing what they know, trying to come up with stories and has inspiration and it works. But then all of a sudden there's a point where it's like, I just have to figure this out and make it work and actually do the work and write and write and write until it works and figure out the best way for this to work. I can't just wait for inspiration to strike me or to have a fever dream or to have, you know what I mean? And with him, I think it's like, you know, all or nothing. It's either like, I either experience this and
lives and dies by the fountainhead.
Yeah, kind of. And I think for me, at least, I think that's why I have such a teeter totter.
Love hate
with him. So. Yeah, but it was interesting. Yeah. It was interesting to sort of garner that from the film and come to that realization. So. Bravo to the filmmakers.
Yeah, they did a nice job with it. So thanks again to Jordan and all the folks that came out here to see it. So, all right, man, cool.
Another episode. Look at that, two in a row.
I know, it's like 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, that don't get used to that.
I will not get used to that, but Tom's going to make fun of us.
Well, Tom can kiss my ass. He does like 3 shows a week.
Yeah, I'll just say have a good Thanksgiving, everyone. We'll be back after your turkey day.
Sometime in December.
Yes. All right, bye-bye. Views expressed by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2010. I know you're a super genius. I know you're a super genius. Polishing the